It's my great pleasure to introduce Sharon C. from L.A. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Sharon Crane. I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to be here. I was laughing. I thought, beepers, where have you been? Beepers, okay. If you got a beeper, where have you been? That's what I want to know. Just kind of struck me funny. Anyway, thank you very much for having me, Luther, and the meeting, the specific group for inviting me. Happy birthday to my friend Kathy. And it's great to see my old babysitter in the room. She used to babysit my child when he was little, and I was just remarking to her that he's fine, in spite of her. And no, I'm teasing. But I was a single parent for most of his years growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he turned out just fine. It was really a relief, though, when he went to say, I don't like going to those meetings anymore. I found him boring. I thought, oh, okay. He's not taking notes on how to go out and do what he wants and get over on people. So that was good. And I'm happy to report he's doing well at 22 years old. And I'm happy to report I came to, last time I was in Vegas was March 18th. Casey and I came and got married, and we had a great time, and we didn't tell anyone, and as you all know, whatever went on stays here. So I can talk about it with all of you, but not back home. So it's just been a delight to be married, and I never thought I would feel that way. I'm 30 years and, 10 months and 27 days sober today. And I feel like there's so many adventures still I get to have. And when I sit in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have the joy of living every single day of my life because there's hope. And hope was something that got up and walked out of the bar I was drinking in, and my drinking changed when hope walked out of my life. And that's one of the biggest things I get every time I come to the meeting. I get to hear hope. And it renews me and lets me know that, oh, that's right. Your world looks like my world. I'm not so alone. We are all from the mothership. You know, we all get here and we meet together. And I get to hear chapter 5 read, sink a little deeper in my seat, knowing that I have a common solution with all of you. We all had a lot of common problem when we were out there, and we probably wouldn't have drank much with each other, and that's okay. But the common solution in hearing chapter 5 and knowing that I can sit deeper in my seat, take a breath and get hope back. It's just, you can't buy it. You cannot buy what happens to us when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and our life begins again and our dying has been interrupted. And, you know, I love to hang with the people that are on the broad highway. Your group is active and this is a broad highway kind of bunch. And, you know, I'm an inclusive kind of person. And I love that, you know, it's one alcoholic talking to another, that missing ingredient that alcoholics that tried to get better all those years ago. Your little handout tonight talks a little bit about the Washingtonians and other groups that worked for alcoholics, but that one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic that Bill and Bob discovered was what was missing. So I am always very happy to come and have an eyeball with a new person and have an eyeball with somebody who knows how I feel. 18, 19 newcomers, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to say one thing, and then you can go back to thinking about your favorite subject, which is yourself, I'm sure. Put your mind in the trunk of your car for about a year. Make your feet smart. Your feet will get you to where you have to go. Make your feet, pedicure them, love them, take care of them. Your feet will get you to your sponsor's house. Your head will tell you, I don't need to get out of bed today. They don't understand, really. Your head will tell you, I never drank in Paris. That's what my head says. Your head will tell you a lot of things that, you know, aren't true. And especially if you've got a newcomer mind, you're really good. Your mind is really good at getting to you. So you have to have some actions under your belt so that we have a defense against the first drink. So make your feet your friend, put your mind in the trunk of your car, and if you're like Mike, the first 10 minutes, you don't have a car, borrow somebody's car. Put your mind in your sponsor's trunk for about a year. And then you can, if it's kind of dried out by the time you look at it after a year and done some step work, and you can, you know, begin to have a few rights back, you know. I love it when the newcomers get their rights back. And I love it, too, that I get to watch the surrenders of people and that have found a brand new way of life. I really believe by seconds and inches we're the lucky ones. We are the lucky ones. You can go out there and throw a stone and you'll hit an alcoholic that will never, ever, ever know the inside of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. They'll never get to sit here and, you know, judge the speaker and judge the coffee or whatever. They'll never have that opportunity. So if you're in the room, you've already beat the odds. And I want to welcome all the new people. I drank growing up, and it wasn't that it was easy to get. It was Iowa, so I had a hard time finding it, but I made it happen. And alcohol was spiritual for me. Alcohol allowed, from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, allowed me to breathe deeper. Alcohol allowed my mind to get down to one voice, which was, let's party. And we all got down to one voice, because I had that mind. I was an insomniac. It was a busy mind, busy, busy, busy. And I told my one girlfriend growing up, camping out one night under the stars, I told her about all this, and she didn't speak to me for about 2 years. She just thought I was the weirdest friend. So I learned not to share myself with others. I was in the confessional once a little bit too long, and it was a small town, and everybody, you know, what'd she do? She was with those Iowa City boys in the back seat, I bet, you know, and it was like, oh. So I learned to get the confessional down to like 30 seconds, you know, and hope the priest was passed out on the other side, which he was, because we used to drink together later. And then they sent him away. But I was really good at masking those inner voices, those inner thoughts, the wild ideas I had. But when I drank alcohol, I found the Lovar boys. We had the GTO. We rolled it out there in the country. We hit the Seven Hills. We got air. I'm not even old enough to drive yet, and, you know, we're drinking bourbon, and I'm sneaking out of the house, and, you know, and as soon as we rolled the car and landed, you know, tires down, it was like, yes, you know, I wanted to do it again. It was just how I was made. So I was made for tequila. Once I discovered tequila, I was made for that. I was made for Harley Davidson's. I was made for instant gratification. I am not sitting back waiting for long-term comfort, you know. I don't really want to finish college and be a teacher in this corny life, in this corny state with these straight people. It was the 60s. There was a lot going on. It wasn't just say no. It was just say thanks. It was a big truth search. I found a lot of spiritual things, except when I would find truth, it would melt before I could write it down, you know, But we were drinking, and we drank a lot. And I was a nice little girl that used to walk down the street with my dad, and he would look in the restaurants and the office buildings where there was hanging a painting that I had done. And somewhere along in my life, in my drinking and my active alcoholism, King Alcohol came along and asked for my painting ability, asked for my artistic talent, and I paid. Somewhere along the line in my drinking, maybe it was the Mountain Man Bar and Aspen, Colorado, maybe that was where my dignity was asked for. And King Alcohol asked for it, I gave it. Alcohol was going to win at every point in my life because it was spiritual for me. It was the only thing that made me feel complete. It was what filled me up from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes. It allowed me to be omnipotent and bulletproof. It allowed me to stick out my thumb and go coast to coast. It allowed me to go, you know, to all those peace marches. It allowed me to not need anybody. It allowed me to drink how I wanted and to, you know, walk over my dog that had just gotten killed by a car because I was too drunk to see it coming when I was calling its name. Alcohol allowed me to come to you an ember of life. I gave every piece that I had when it asked. And if it would have asked for that last ember and I didn't have the privilege of coming to you on August 20th, 1975, you would have another speaker. But I had a chance. I had a moment. There was a moment in my life, a moment of clarity, which I got on July 27th, 1975, 31 years ago tonight. I was a blackout drinker. I had been with a carnival. I had been busted for drugs, and I was a convicted felon from Louisiana. I had lived in the French Quarter. I had danced on Bourbon Street. I had a pet skunk. I had some pet turtles. We had a pet snake. I used to wear platinum wigs and glitter eye makeup and short little funny outfits with zippers everywhere. And I also had lost my gallbladder. I had pancreatitis. I was on two organic farms. One of them, we raised organic seed, which was from Hawaii. Very nice stuff. And the other commune, they didn't drink like I drank, and they got mad the night I drank their bong wine. So they asked me to leave, gave me a dog and asked me to leave. So alcohol allowed me to not go home and see my parents. Alcohol allowed me to not care when my grandmother sat me with the children at the card table on Thanksgiving in the other room because they didn't know quite how I was going to act. Alcohol allowed me to not compare myself to that older hero child and my younger sister and my terrific little brother. Alcohol allowed me to really just to take what I needed and keep moving. And when it was working, when I'm in the Bastille, which was a French Quarter bar that we painted the windows black so not one ounce of sunlight got in, nice cold bar, Billy the bartender on, I got a tab, and I can keep going on that tab. And Billy can come to my bar, and he's got a tab at my bar, and I know what he likes to drink, and he knows what I like to drink. I can pass out and come to, and pass out and come to, and he'll put my purse under the bar. He'll make sure that things are okay. And I came to out of a blackout, because I'm a blackout drinker. If you're a blackout drinker, you got to pay attention when you come out of it. And it's like, okay, I was in the Bastille. I'm in the middle of a chug-a-lug contest, and I'm in the finals. And I am with, next to me is this big biker gang. I found out later it was the Chosen Few, and I was in the finals against this really big guy. And we were chug-a-lugging out of a rock glass green chartreuse, which is syrupy and, I don't know, 210 proof is what it is, but green and syrupy. And I'm in the middle of my glass when I realize what's happening and the attention is on me and this guy. And I'm starting to get sick as I'm putting it, you know, we all do that. But I have my pride. So a little came out in the glass and I shoved it back down. And I won because, you know, I'm very competitive. So then I went in the bathroom and got sick and went into another blackout and came to a couple of days later, and back at my bar I was working, and I had a chunk of hair out and a lump on my head, and I didn't think much about it. I guess I had a good time, you know. But I went back into the Bastille after my shift a couple of days later, and Billy said, "Out, you can't come in here." I said, "Billy, I got money. I'll pay my tab. What do you want?" And he said, "You can't. The owner's 86'd you. I can't do anything about it." I said, "Okay. Tell me quick what happened." And he said, "Do you see that ceiling fan? Well, it was broken, and I guess I had been dancing on the bar, and my hair, I had this long kind of scraggly hair, had kind of gotten into the ceiling fan. That was why I had a bald spot." But what happened that really made, these are the kind of people I drank with. That was okay. Broke the ceiling fan, dancing on the bar, whatever. That was okay. But what made the owner mad was I got whipped around into his expensive bottles, not the well whiskey, the expensive Bacardi and, you know, the expensive rum and, you know, the expensive brandy. So I had broken these bottles, and he got very upset and said I was 86. So those are the kind of people I drank with, you know. Don't mess with my booze is what it was. So that's a little synopsis of how I drank. I want to tell you, too, that the last time I saw my parents, they came to visit me living above a really seedy bar in Lower Decatur Street. It was actually St. Peter Street, down by Decatur Street, when it was the seedier part of the French Quarter. And we had the skunk and the snake and the dog and my father didn't come in. He set his jaw and stood at the door. And my mother came in, and I remember her crying. And I'm with my new boyfriend of 2 years, actually. We stayed together 2 years. And I have a new black eye. And, you know, he's got maybe a few bruised ribs. Because that was love. It was exciting, and it was love. And I didn't grow up around that at all. But see, somewhere in there, alcohol, King Alcohol said, "Okay, you like that excitement? This is what you're going to think love is." I say, "Fine, great, let's go for it." I didn't have it growing up. There was a loving family, and now it's absolutely normal for me to live in that kind of situation for 2 years. And that's what my mom saw me living with and in that filth. And my father, who I wasn't able to sit down and break bread with him for years, years. My father, who bailed me out of jail in Louisiana, or tried to. My father, who I broke his heart, I drug things home and shook him in his face and asked him to help me, and when he'd get close, I'd push him back with anger, and it was all fear, and it was all sadness, and it was all victim. But I would be angry, and I would push my dad back with my mouth and make him sad to look at his daughter, this second daughter that played the accordion growing up because my dad was Czech, you know. And believe me, the accordion wasn't cool then. It's not cool now. But I did it because I wanted to do something special for my dad. I love my dad. And now we can't even look. We can't lock eyes. We can't sit down and have a meal together. It's over. Somewhere King Alcohol said, okay, the love of your parents, fitting into that family that was so terrific growing up, you got to give that now. Fine, take it. Take it. Just let me keep going. And now the guilt is compounded. And so I need to drink so that the guilt shuts up. I need to drink so that I'm not the victim. And after quite a bit of kind of a violent 1975, my friend was shot and killed. I was in a blackout Mardi Gras day. I went on the run, and I ended up at Barney's Beanery, where I first saw the Big Book. A girl was too drunk to go on her court card, get her court card signed, that the bartender took away the keys to her car. She had the Big Book under her arm, and she went to a taxi, and we gave her a toast. And I had never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous before. And that girl's name was Chris Running. And I had some more alcoholism to live through, active alcoholism, sick, sorry, alcohol not working, DTs, stuttering, people in the windows and in the TVs talking about me. And I didn't know I was having DTs. I didn't know what that was. Very, very sick. Red dashiki, Panama hat, 170-something pounds. A book in there called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass in my backpack. And I'm unemployable. I'm unemployable now. And some guys said, let's go party. And I was in Barney's. And they said, you know, we're going to go to Palm Springs. I said, sure, let's go. And they left me at this nice club. And I said, well, I thought we were going to party. And they said, now we need a little extra weight on the back tire. It was windy going through the desert. Thanks a lot. And drove off. And I guess I was in a blackout. I guess I met some people. And when I came to that night, July 27th, July 27th, 1975, 31 years ago tonight, I was in an apartment building that was empty. I realized this wasn't a DT. I realized they really were kicking me in the face. I realized they were really hurting me, and it was, I became a victim of violent crime is what happened, and they tossed me off the side of the road with a concussion and a broken jaw in three places, and a lot of other bones broken, and some, a lot of bruising and scraping, and I'm laying down in the sand, and the sun is coming up, and I hear a voice that says, get up, I want to live. That was my moment. That was one of my moments I got to hear. And I guess I did want to live, because I guess I did get up, and I landed in the hospital for 2 weeks. And something interesting, and I hope I never, ever forget, because this thing went to court, and it was all a big thing, and I was fairly new. I was very new, actually. My jaw was wired shut the first 3 months in AA. I couldn't talk. I had to learn to listen. It was a blessing. I'm sitting on the witness stand identifying pictures of myself that they're showing me, and I sat down, and then they called this man who I didn't know who he was, and he was the neighbor by the apartment place where they had taken me that night, and he said that he was crying because he felt bad. He had heard this woman screaming, and then he didn't know, should I call the police, should I not call the police? And he was an older man, and he was visibly shaken, and he said, and then when the screaming stopped, I knew that maybe it was over, and I didn't call the police. And at that moment, I remembered making a conscious decision that night to just stop screaming, who cares anyway. I made that conscious decision. I just stopped screaming. And I was hoping it was lights out. I was 25 years old. and I was hoping it was lights out. And as I lay in that gutter, I told you, I heard the voice say, get up, I want to live. It was like, ugh. I guess there was work to be done. I needed to come day A and have a purpose, you know. But I didn't know that morning, except that we are survivors. We are survivors. If you've made it here, you do not have to go out. The door does not swing both ways. That girl, Chris running with the big book in the bar, that was so nice to me. I'm staying above a liquor store after this is all over, sipping on red wine through the place where the tooth had been kicked in, and on the wires, cheap red wine. It was a hot August day, and he came, and this guy I was staying with, who felt sorry for me, said, you have to leave, you're depressing me. I had nowhere to go. That was the beauty of that day, because that's my sobriety date. If I had one more place to go, I called my mother. My mother said, I can't help you, Sharon, go to the Salvation Army. If mother would have sent $20, seconds and inches, you'd have another speaker. Because the next thing I did was call that girl, Chris, running, because her number was there. And she was always nice to me. I don't relate Alcoholics Anonymous. I just relate this girl let me sleep on her floor. She had given me some clothes. She bought me drinks. She was dating the guy where I was staying, and her number was there. And I think about if her number would have been turned upside down, you probably have another speaker too. That's the beauty of having a sobriety date is hang on to it. That's my day of surrender. I don't have to go any further than that. And on the days when my head says, oh, I never really did drink in Paris, I get to a meeting, I call somebody, I tell on myself, because that's how I start, is face down in a gutter, if I'm so lucky, to start there. It's not pretty, and being in Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years, I get to watch people come in and get a brand new life, and I get to watch people be buried. And this disease is the biggest equalizer that if you've got it, that you'll ever, ever know. It doesn't care who you are, what you do, what you drive, what you're made of, anything. If you have it, it will take you out one way or another, slowly or quickly. But the good news is that we have Alcoholics Anonymous almost in any city, wherever you are. So that I always remember that I am not a cucumber. I've become a pickle. I can never go back to being a cucumber. I am bodily and mentally different, and that doesn't change. No matter where I go or who I am still bodily and mentally different. When I drink alcohol, my life is over as I know it. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I don't care who I hurt. And all the people that love me will have to go cry again. So I always remember when I'm sitting in the room that my seat is not about me. It is about those 10 people that love me and sleep at night a little bit more because of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother sleeps at night because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That seat is about a lot more people than me. So on August 20th, when I called that girl Chris, she recognized alcoholism. Funny how we do, because she was one, but she wasn't sober that day. So she had me call somebody named Suzanne, and she wouldn't give me the number unless I promised to call. So now I want to call because she won't give me the number. And I call a total stranger, and I don't call a total stranger. And I talked to this woman on the phone through my wired-up jaw, and she knows where I am because everybody knew the liquor store. All alcoholics knew the liquor store where I was. And she said, put your drink down and put your joint down. I thought, how does she know I had both? She read my mail. She knew I had both. That piqued my interest for a second because I was really out of it when I came to you. I was so out of it. I'm so glad I couldn't talk, really. And so I called this woman, Suzanne. She told me to put my drink and joint down and go sit on the steps. She knew exactly where to tell me to go sit, and I did it. I did it. And that was my day. I don't know if I would be so surrendered on it the day before or the day after. You know, the gift was given that day because I ended up in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that day. And that's the gift, that there is a set of tools, that there is a solution, that we have a, you know, we've suffered from a common peril, we have that common solution, and we are like survivors of the shipwreck, and we get together to tell our stories, we get together to identify, we get together so we don't forget, we get together to get the hope and the joy back into our hearts so we can go out and do it another day and then come back to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with my people, the ones that, you know, laugh at funerals and cry at weddings. The ones we all laugh at the different places. You know, I like being with a bunch of normies and I'm laughing at something really sick and they're all like, oh my God, who are you? Where did you come from? And, but in the room here, we get it. We get the joke. So I came to you on August 20th and I ended up at a meeting where it was the Pacific Group meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea what that meant or who it was or if I even heard it that night. I just know some man wanted to give me a book and he wanted to talk about payment terms. And I'm starting to hallucinate as this man is talking to me now because I detoxed in the rooms. So I gave him my last quarter and I was beginning to panic. I can remember just beginning to panic because I had no idea how long this was going to go on and where am I and what's this about. And he went over and wrote in this book and wrote down my quarter and came back and gave me this book, which I have still today, and written in pencil, Echo Park, August 20th, 1975. He wrote that in pencil for me, and I still have that in pencil in my very first big book. And that man, Maurice, said, I knew you were going to make it that year when I turned a year. He said, you were the only newcomer who paid me back for that book. One quarter at a time, because I didn't want to owe you anything. I'm just here for a little while till I get it together, and then I don't know where I'm going. And they moved me out of that liquor store, and they took over. And I'm also so grateful. And you seem to have that active, I love it that you pass out a newcomer little bunch of meeting directory and something else. I love it when you do that because they didn't say to me, okay, they're there, honey. We'll pick you up next Tuesday. Don't worry. Just be well, and we'll pick you up next Tuesday and drop me off at that liquor store I was living at. I wouldn't be here. They took over. Their sponsors had said, now work with this. Learn to work with a newcomer and, let the liquor store lights turn off before you send her upstairs. So I'd sit in the back of this Volkswagen sweating and detoxing and hallucinating and can't talk, and they're talking a mile a minute. And he's like, oh, God, shut up. And they're talking about themselves over and over again. I kept waiting for them to say, and now let's hear from you. And nobody seemed to care. I had this newspaper clipping in my pocket that just disintegrated about this, victim thing from the Palm Springs paper. And nobody asked. They just said, God, look at her. Maybe she'll make it. She looks tired. Look at her. Maybe she'll make it. She looks surrendered. Then they would say things like, get a sponsor. You're going to get drunk. And so I asked this lady to sponsor me because she wrote, call any time on her phone number. And everybody else had just written their phone number and their name. I thought, oh, maybe she's nice. Maybe a month, a little more than a month sober. And I've been sleeping on floors a week at a time. They had assigned me a floor and given me a sleeping bag. And me and my big book and paper bag of mismatched goods in my backpack. And that was my worldly possessions when I came to you. Moved around, and then I got this sponsor, and she put me on her couch. And it was like, oh, get a sponsor, your life gets better. It was great. That's what I'm connecting. I'm connecting really strangely. I'm like a computer that's been miswired with my emotions and my reactions. And, I don't know if you identify, but like for the first couple of years, somebody would say something to me, and I wouldn't respond properly. I wouldn't respond at all, and then 2 weeks later, in the middle of the night, I'd sit straight up and go, I should have said this, I just didn't know how to be present. I still have to work at being present. And it's such a joy to be present because that's where it is. That's where the joy is. That's where God is, right now. One alcoholic talking to another, between me and you, putting the light on and walking out in the world and letting it shine a little, whether you're watching or not. Rains on the just and the unjust. It's not my job to judge who gets my kindness or who gets my service. I'm a blackout drinker. I need to be of service every day of my life for the rest of my life so I can continue to make my amends to people that I've never met because I can't go back to the people I don't know I harm because I'm a blackout drinker. So I have to be available and alert and ready to be. As it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It doesn't say just alcoholics or just your family, or I have to take it out in the world and walk it. And it's such a freedom. It's such a freedom. I can live from the tip of my head. I've had that spiritual awakening. The spirits of Alcoholics Anonymous, soothe me, make me smile inside, know that I'm just, you know, on this great adventure and there's still so much to learn, that, you know, the girl that I was sponsoring finally did that fourth step and we're going to go do five tonight because I know it's going to change her life. That other girl that I've been working with, we're going to go do step three, and I know once she does that, we're going to rock and roll. What a joy. What a joy to be able to be a link in the chain, and what I have to do is worry about my link and be strong with my link. I did go to a lot of meetings. I got a lot of commitments, and Janet was wild. Janet used to laugh like a duck, quack, quack, quack. She had like one leg shorter than the other, and this was in the 70s, and people were still wearing hot pants, and so she would walk across the room and kind of waddle, and she had this wild black hair and long fingernails, and she used to put them in my face a lot, and I used to sometimes look at her and go, God, that's my sponsor. And she would go, God, that's my baby. Don't tell anyone that you're my baby. But Janet was on to me. I had a perfect sponsor. She was, for 5 years, she was on to me. She was on to what my anger was masking. She knew how to motivate me with my anger. I remember I called her one morning, I'm a food waitress. 3 months I took the wires off. I'm a food waitress now. I don't serve food. I'm a bartender. I'm a French Quarter bartender. I've got this bartending gig set up. Actually, it was at Chippendales. And she said, no, I don't think so. Why don't you go and, no, she was a waitress, so she told me where to go, and I was mad. So I would put everything down on my resume, you know, dancing on the 500 Club and busted for drugs in Bogalusa. And this one place, actually the headquarters of Hamburger Hamlet, the guy was so fascinated, he ordered in lunch. Asked me about me. I told him, you know, I talk, motor mouth. And he's enjoying all these stories. He buzzed his friend, hey, get in here, listen to this, you know. And I didn't get hired. Of course I didn't get hired. So we kind of did this, you know. She gave me a cheat sheet. She said, okay, now when you ask for dates, put these things down. When they ask for addresses, put these things down. Don't put everything down there. So I got hired at this place, and I was just so angry. And, you know, you go to a restaurant, do you want an angry waitress serving you your first cup of coffee of the day? Or, you know, your burnt eggs and toast, you know, eat them, enjoy it, you know. And one night I was whining about that, and so they brought over Sally Carpenter, one of the Queen Al-Anons, and they showed me how to smile, how to do it like this. And I said, this is AA, we're supposed to be honest in all our affairs. And he said, no, that's in here. Out there, they don't care. They just want a waitress with a smile and some hot food, and not one who depresses them. Because when people ask me how I was, I would tell them. And, yeah. Even the alcoholics from the Culver City Clubhouse didn't want to sit in that station anymore. No, not with her. We've been there. So I did this phony Al-Anon smile all night long. I had a split shift, and I had to go to work after the meeting. And I made some money. I made some tips. I thought, okay, these people are kind of smart. Maybe I'll listen. And I put my tips together, and I got a little $24 a week room, and I got a phone, and I got my first obscene phone call. It was my very first phone call. It was an obscene phone call. I got a coffee pot, a Mr. Coffee. I had a little bed, and I started my life there. And my sponsor had me hang up that Just for Today pamphlet, and I had to do something nice for someone every single day without getting found out. And then when I would see her at the meeting, she'd say, okay, did you do it? And I'd tell her, yeah, I did. She'd say, what'd you do? And I told her, and then she said, ha-ha, now you told me, you got to go do another one. Oh, I hated her. You know, and I fell for it more than once, I'm afraid to say. I was kind of shaken up there in the brain for a while. And then I got a car. I got this cheap primer gray, I don't know, it was a Chevelle. And they said, you got to get it registered, driver's license, and insurance all in the same name. I thought, how do they know that? So I worked on that, and then they let me drive. And after I got the car insurance, a man named Hank Johnson came over to my little $24 a week room and sat there and wrote up the policy on his knees because I didn't have a table. And I made him some coffee and the Mr. Coffee, and I had my tips together to give him the first payment, and I'm still with that insurance company today. And I think of the kindness of the people, how they helped me become a citizen, how they helped me feel like I had some worth. I was sitting in that coffee shop one night, and I had lost some feeling on the right side of my face. I've had a lot of dental work and a lot of taking gum, moving gum around in my mouth, and it's like continual sometimes, but I'm very, very lucky. I'm very, very lucky. I know that. And, you know, I had just, I had learned to not take anything and to tough it out. And, you know, of course I took Novocaine, but I never took anything else. And I had to take a big chunk off the roof of my mouth and put it somewhere else. And I wasn't going to take the, you know, the pain pills. And my sponsor said, "You are not sleeping. If you don't sleep tonight, or call that surgeon and find out what you can, you know, what you can do other than the pain pill." And so the surgeon was very nice, and we really went through everything. We found some, like, really intense spray Novocaine that I could spray on and start to sleep, because I couldn't sleep. And then I started to heal, and there was a solution to that. And I had pancreatitis in my first year, and it was so painful. I would lay in bed and sip water. I couldn't even move. And I learned to pray. Somebody talked about that last night in our meeting, about how the pain was removed with prayer, and it happened to me too. And I'm pretty darn healthy today. Of course, I can't get away with everything I would like to get away with, but, you know, I like being of service. I like being healthy. I like having energy. I like being God's kid in this world that we get to have for fun and for free. We get to make a difference in lives. You get to make a difference in my life. You know, not my closet, what I wear, not my car, in my life. We're about saving lives. It's really so miraculous that we get to be in the room tonight. And I never want to forget that, how lucky we are. Many alcoholics never, ever get to grace the room, ever. And I was in that coffee shop one night, and the coffee was pouring out of my face because it wasn't closing right. And I thought, oh, God, they saw me, and there's a puddle on the table. And that woman, Pat Hodges, she was a little bit matter-of-fact. She saw me, and I thought she was going to throw up her hands and say, oh, my God, can't somebody else watch her tonight? Please, look at her, you know? She's 6 months sober, for God's sake, and she's, look at her. But she didn't. She picked up her napkin, and she put it on my mouth and wiped my mouth and put it on the puddle of coffee on the table and went back to her conversation and gave me a wink. And those are the kind of people that understood the broken soul that came here. You helped me put it back together, piece by piece. When it was time, when something showed up, we worked on it. I remember doing my first third step with Janet. It was, you know, in her living room, and the kids were home, and the sun was up, and we're on our knees, and I'm all embarrassed, and reading this out of the book, and she's all excited, and she won't stop hugging me, and she's got her face right in my chest, and she won't stop hugging me, and I'm like thinking, am I going to have to hit her? Am I going to have to peel her off me? You know, stop touching me, and thinking all this. I'm not saying it. I'm stiff as a board. And she's just so happy I did this, and all of a sudden I started to feel warm and love. It was her transference, I'm sure, because I was still pretty wacky, but my first decision, this is a broken computer, you know, this first decision was, oh, I must be in love with my sponsor and I'm probably gay. And that was my first third step. So we didn't make any decisions in my first year, and it was good because boy meets girl at AA campus, and I did meet my husband in my first year, and they were really good to me, though. I mean, they shoved me when I needed to be shoved emotionally, pushed me out the door. I had that brain tumor that morning. I had a migraine headache, and I'm tying those white waitress shoes, and I laid back down in bed. I had that early shift, and I called her, and I said, I can't do it. I know it's the brain tumor. I have this migraine, and it's the tumor. She hadn't had her coffee yet. It was 6 in the morning. I was stupid to even call her so early. Because she said, you know, if you die at work, we'll give you the best funeral anybody's ever seen in this group. But if you die at home in bed, there is no funeral. And she hung the phone up in my ear. And she taught me to show up no matter how mad I was. And she taught me to show up for my commitments no matter what. And I got a thermometer. If I didn't have a temperature, I showed up. And that's my criteria today. If I don't have a temperature, I show up. And I'm so glad I learned. It's very simple. And then if I'm really sick, I know. I go home. But my head, you never really drank in Paris. You know, my head, you really were happier when you were alone. My head tells me things. 2008, I have to write this down for 2008. I'm not going to be here then, you know, but I'll write it down. Okay. That's what my head does. When they asked me to be a GSR and they tricked me into 2 years, it was like I was so mad. 2 years, I won't be here 2 years. It was one meeting at a time, and I met some really terrific people all over. It made my AA bigger. It really did. I've always had commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. Cookie girl, cookie's power. Cookie's power. If you don't like that old-timer, or they made you mad, you don't have to give them their cookies for a while. Nope, they were out of Fig Newtons tonight, Clint. Sorry. And I had another friend, and she's my friend Chris, who got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They wheeled her in a wheelchair in a meeting. She didn't know me, and at 31 years old, she died of alcoholism, liver failure. That's the girl who got me to AA, that phone number. Another lady named June Ann, the same thing. I would ride with her, and she would drop me off at the meeting, and I'd, you know, go get the cookies and then come back, and then I'd have to wash cups. This is before I had a car, and so she didn't come back one night, and there's no cookies, and everybody's upset. You know, where's the cookies? Where's Junan? And all of a sudden, an LAPD car, black and white, pulls up to the curb, and we, okay, what's going on? You know, and the secretary goes down, and they're talking to the cop in the car, and they're starting to walk up. The cop and John are walking up towards the church where the meeting is, and we're going, what's going on? You know, and we hear Junan's name mentioned. What's going on with Junan? What's going on? And we're kind of huddling around, and the cop is saying, well, this lady, Junan, I guess she bought some cookies, and then she went back in the store and shoplifted some candy bars, got caught. They called me. I got to take her in. She's in the car. But she made me promise to stop and bring you these cookies on the way. And those are my teachers, no matter what, you know, no matter what. My amends have been amazing. 2 years of sobriety, my dad came out here and walked me down the aisle in Los Angeles. I'm still in the Pacific group today. I just, you know, it works, don't fix it. I had no idea where I landed. I had no idea what it was all about. I just know that when I go to my meeting on Wednesday night with my almost 31 years, there's a whole bunch of rows of people that have a lot more time than me. And it makes me feel so safe. Makes me feel great. That they're showing up every Wednesday with the lights on and the lilt in their step and excited about Alcoholics Anonymous and where's the newcomer and let me tell you this story. And I love that. I know how to do time. I don't want to do time sitting in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my life. I'm having a great, fun time, even through the tough stuff, because I know it's temporary. Keith C. used to talk about the seemingly bad as well as the good, which is necessary for our growth. It's kind of his signature, and I always like to remember him once in a while because he was a great man with a great big spirit. And whatever seems so bad at the moment is just so that if I stay sober, it's just a hallway I'm in. And the new view will be more beautiful when the door opens on it and I get through the hallway called growth. And I'm such a whiner, oh, growl, you know, it's changing, you know. I've learned how to take the blinders off in the hallway. I've learned how to help somebody else in the hallway. I've learned how to watch the person get through the hallway to the new view and know my turn is coming. Yeah, right, you know. Fred got through the door, my turn's coming. The new view, growth, I can leave it behind me. It's just called growth. Things change and things aren't always fair. My sponsor says, pray for mercy, not justice. So my dad got to come to a meeting and meet all of you and walk me down the aisle, and he looked at me at the end of my wedding day and he said, Sharon, if you think twice about what you were doing before, think twice. If you want to do what you were doing before, think twice, because you've got it made here. And my dad gave me a piece of approval there. Instead of making a big deal about it, I just said, yeah, you're right, Dad. And somebody snapped a picture, and we're eyeball to eyeball, and it is my wedding day. It is the end of my wedding day, and that's a precious picture. I don't remember looking at my dad in years and him looking at me in the eyes in years. And it was slow with my dad, and the rest of the family, it went quickly. But Dad, I had really broken his heart, and he wasn't quite sure, and he was happy I was married, and he was happy my jobs were getting. I was getting better jobs and becoming a professional, and I seemed to come home when I said I would. I seemed to call him at his birthday. I seemed to remember Christmas with presents. I seemed to participate. I would go home to Iowa once a year. I participated. And my second sponsor said, it's time to pay your father back the money you owe him. And I thought, how does she know about the money? I think they go to sponsor school and they just kind of wait. And okay, here she is. Better job. About, I don't know, maybe she's about 5 years sober. Time to start paying him back the money. Okay. I called him and asked him, and he was ready for me. He had run a calculator tape. He had read the big book. He knew if I stayed sober, I would get to page 78 and page 79. And I had a new resentment. And that's exactly what happened. My sponsor laughed. And so in 2 days, my dad accepted my payment terms. And she said, you know, because sponsors are like that, they just want one more little thing for you because they know that it can be better than what you think you can have. She said, I want you to put a newsy note with that check in the mail. And don't be late with that check, because you're the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous your dad will ever see. Be a good one. Oh, I hate that example. I stand up straight and tall, you know, I straighten my dress and straighten my spine. Example, it's about Bill and Bob. Okay. I take that very, very seriously. Because being an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're watching or not, people are watching out there. Things happen. Things break, anonymities get broken in just the right time so people can come in the room, so that it's not about them coming in the room. It's about their mother, and it's about her sleeping at night because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they get sobriety, and then they pass it on to their boss. And their boss, I love the coincidences here. I love the little God shots. I love if I just stay open, they're happening all the time. I love international conventions because they're all around you. And you just, it's so big, you just got to go with the flow. You can't really make plans. And when you don't make plans, it's so much more fun. If you haven't been to one, don't miss one. Don't miss the next one. I've been to every single one. And my son, since he was a baby, he went to Montreal, and he's been to every single one. It's such a celebration of life. So I sent my dad that check and that note for 4 3/4 years on time. And it got better with my dad. He was getting his money, and he was seeing I was working, and he was seeing I was responsible, and it got better. That's my dad. That's the kind of man he is. He wants to know I'm taking care of my responsibilities. He called me between Christmas and New Year's. He said, Merry Christmas, daughter number two. Your debt is free and clear. I don't want your checks anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. And I got to walk into a guilt-free relationship because that sponsor knew I could have that. I didn't think I would have the innocence coming back into my life, but my sponsor knew it could happen. Because between me and my sponsor is there. Between me and me is me and my little designs and plans. It doesn't say magnificent. They're little. And my sponsor always wants more for me because he can see. You know, I've got Clancy as a sponsor for 20 years because it had a baby in 84 at 10 years of marriage. It fell apart. Janine was there. Oh, my God. I was pissed off. He left me for a newcomer in the room. Nobody got custody of the meetings, and it was pretty painful. And my sponsor smoked pot, so I got Clancy. I was just scared. I needed someone louder than my head, and he is a voice louder than my head. And so I want to let you know that that second wife, we're very good friends. And they've been divorced quite a while now, so it's been easier. But I walked through that hallway with dignity and grace because Clancy demanded I do that. And after about a year and a half, not dating anyone, that's when I met Casey, and we started a long friendship, which grew into love. And 4 months married today, and it's great. Long friendship, doing Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad was killed in April of 99, and he was gone in a second. He was gone in a flash, and it was hard for my mom and hard for all of us, and it's still hard for my mom. But I'll tell you, I have my father right here because there's nothing between me and him, because you had helped me do the work necessary to have that innocent relationship with him again. And little did I know that it would help me stand up straight and tall, tip of my head to tip of my toes, around every single man I meet. I didn't know that there was something there with that. And my life in Alcoholics Anonymous is just always an adventure. I am one of those freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose kind of gals. I got my pardon for fun and for free in the mail in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life, I have a lot of little gifts like that that have happened to me. And seeing Janine here tonight is another gift. And I'm so glad you have the privilege of being an Alcoholics Anonymous, like all of the new ones that are here tonight. And I want to thank you for the privilege of your God reaching out and touching me tonight. Thank you.